Welcome to Book Spectrum. I am your host, Chris Cordani. As you know, on Book Spectrum, we bring you new authors and longtime writers from various professions across the spectrum. With me is a man who grew into a financial success after humble beginnings in his youth. He learned quite a bit about money, work ethic, success, and making good choices while growing up. Today, Mark Lazar is sharing what he learned with you in the book Pathway to Prosperity. Mark Lazar, welcome to Book Spectrum.
Thanks, Chris. Happy to be here.
A lot of people are saying another business book, another one of these success books. But when I put them on Book Spectrum, I try to have some people who can bring something different to the table. And you do have a lot of that in Pathway to Prosperity. But first, there were plenty of different definitions by these writers of financial success, stability, or prosperity. What's yours?
If I were to boil it down to the most simplest component, it would be peace of mind. It's not necessarily living in the biggest house or having the nicest car. It's that peace of mind that comes with knowing that, you know, today is a good day and tomorrow is an even better day. You know, I look around and I see this proliferation of payday loan centers. We know that people are struggling to make ends meet. This past year with COVID probably exacerbated that for a lot of people. It leads to fear and uncertainty. And, you know, being financially stable takes away a lot of that fear and uncertainty.
Mark, it's often said in the investing world there were two types of suits, spooners and streeters. The former born into wealth and bred for Wall Street, the latter who were not so rich and learned their savvy through their own experiences before working there. That can probably go with regular investors as well. In the book, you say growing up poor was the best thing that happened to you. How did your upbringing prepare you for becoming more successful?
That's a great question. You know, I grew up in a blue-collar household. My father was a school bus driver. My mother was a part-time coffee shop waitress, and they were great, hardworking folks, but they never talked to me about money. I don't, quite frankly, think that they understood it themselves. And so I looked around at some of my friends that seemed to be enjoying a better standard of living. They lived in bigger homes and seemed to be a little more comfortable in their day-to-day lives. And it gave me, I probably was a little self-conscious about how that we had lived, and it made me very eager and anxious to learn. You know, going through school, I don't think I ever had a single class that ever explained the basics of how to balance a checkbook or when to use credit and how to use it wisely, how much should you keep as a rainy day fund. So I was always hungry for that knowledge. You know, growing up with a very meager beginning, I think gave me a better work ethic. It made me willing to try harder and to sacrifice and to do the things that was necessary to put myself in a position where I was no longer concerned about tomorrow. Whereas I look at my friends that I grew up with, they sort of took those things for granted. They didn't have the same work ethic. They didn't have the same focus on, you know, becoming financially stable themselves. They just sort of assumed that that was going to happen for them.
It seems like we all would want to believe that sort of thing, where our success would just happen. But if you look around, it just doesn't. When you define prosperity as peace of mind, Mark Lazar, how did you learn that through your humbler beginnings? I mean, I'm sure there were sort of ways to gain peace of mind when you weren't successful, which you were able to kind of parlay to when you got older and learn how to make the right choices for, let's say, an even better state of peace of mind, if that makes sense.
It does. It absolutely does. That, you know, I, again, growing up with very humble beginnings, and then my parents divorced when I was 8. My father, who was a wonderful father, but what little we had when they were married became even less. And so I can remember when I was 8, we lived in a one-bedroom studio and slept on a cot and, you know, in sleeping bags, and did that till I was about 16 years old. And again, my father was a fantastic father, but as long as he had enough money to, you know, that the lights came on, that there's food in the refrigerator, and the car started and had gas in it, he was a happy guy. For whatever reason, I wasn't made that way. I was always probably a little nervous about tomorrow, and wanted to make sure that I knew no matter what, that I could pay my bills and I had a cash reserve. Even at a young age, I started working when I was 12, and I found that there was a correlation between working and saving and having that peace of mind. I worked part-time for a couple of years when I was 12, got another part-time job when I was 14, and really worked full-time since I was 15. And again, it wasn't about stuff. It was about security, that I wanted to have some money in the bank. I didn't want to owe, I didn't want to have loans or debt. Not to say that you shouldn't use credit. Credit, if it's used properly, can be your best friend. But too much debt to me was like acid on the soul. So the right amount of debt and used for the right purposes can actually be a good thing if it's controlled.
Mark, you say just as poverty is a choice, so too is prosperity. But any failure can tell you success is just luck. But seriously, there's a point you make in your book, Mark Lazar, which is really important. When did you learn this, and how did you become one to make the proper choices?
For better or for worse, I learned how to do things right oftentimes by doing them wrong, what they call the school of hard knocks. And again, as I mentioned earlier, that my parents never talked about money. I never picked it up in school. I was very fortunate. I had some friends, their parents, that actually sat down and talked to me a bit about money and answered questions that I had. And what I learned at a young age is that, again, that there's a direct correlation between, effort and reward. And again, I think that's probably one of the best lessons that I learned. Again, I made a lot of mistakes along the way. When credit cards, again, when I was probably 18 and credit cards were really first starting to become ubiquitous. So I kind of got in trouble a little bit with a credit card, and I quickly learned about that. Learned that having little or no debt was probably a wise thing to do. Keeping some money in the bank so that I can make those payments each month was, again, a wise thing to do. So again, a lot of the lessons that I learned, Chris, at least initially before I was formally educated, I just learned things by doing them wrong. And failure is actually is a is a wonderful teacher. I made a lot of mistakes, particularly when I was younger, but I never made the same mistake twice.
With me on Book Spectrum is Mark Lazar. His new book is Pathway to Prosperity. We're talking about that. We're also talking about choices, and that's a big point in your book. Which choices are most important in helping an individual build a solid financial future?
Yeah, that's a great question. Fortunately, that you mentioned earlier about those that were born with a silver spoon and those that perhaps might have gotten lucky, that the good news is that in a free market system that you're in control. In other words, there's some things that you can control and some things you can't. You can't control what the stock market's going to do day to day or what interest rates are going to do, but you can control your behaviors, and that's a wonderful thing. So you can control your education. You can control your career to a large extent. You can control the amount of effort that you put into that and the sacrifices that you make. And all of those things, all of those decisions combine to create a wonderful result if your energies are focused in the right direction. So, I wrote this book to basically give people all of the knowledge and the tools that I wish that I had had when I was younger. To help me again avoid a lot of those mistakes that I made, so the book really is about teaching people how money works and the basics of money. And there's no mystery to it. There's no you don't need a special club ring. You don't have to have an Ivy League education. You don't have to be born to wealth. That I truly believe, Chris, that everybody, if they do just a handful of things a little bit better. Wake up at some point in time, and it may not be tomorrow or next week or next month, but over the course of several years of doing things the right way. And again, I don't mean starting a trading account and trading cryptocurrency or trading stocks or trying to make millions on flipping real estate. That may work for some people, but for most of us. That financial success is a result of doing a dozen things a little bit better. Making sure that we're directing our energies into the right job or career, saving a portion of what we make every day, making good investment decisions, keeping a reasonable cash reserve, using credit wisely, and by doing those things, again, over time, that you'll find that those a handful of little things done a little bit better has an enormous result over the course of, say, 5 or 10 years.
This leads me to something that really bugs me, and you also discuss this in the book, Pathway to Prosperity, Mark Lazar. It's been brought up by many successful people over the past few decades, including the former President Trump. You have your Robert Kiyosakis who said that, and many people who I've interviewed on this program and, of course, worked with on other shows where I've produced. Yet nothing's been done about it. Our U.S. education system has failed us all here. While teachers' unions and school administrators bend over backwards to ban words, take valuable learning time away in favor of what amounts to sensitivity training, and in many cases, indoctrination, arguably. Spelling and essay structure, as well as showing work during math problems and handing in assignments on time, are not important anymore. With that, you and many have said schools need to teach financial education, but they, for the most part, do not. And I mean, it's minuscule in that regard. What needs to be done to get the schools and perhaps the politicians who can make this an important issue pay attention and get this started?
Yeah, that, you raised some terrific points, Chris. You're right that I think back to most of the courses that I had in high school. Certainly, math, reading, history, very valuable. But again, I never had a single course in high school, or quite frankly, in college, that taught me how to balance a checkbook, or how to use credit, or how to set up a 401k or a Roth IRA. Financial literacy is completely ignored in our education system. And that's part of the reason why I've been so passionate about it. There's this huge vacuum of financial literacy. And to your previous point, there seems to be this growing divide between the haves and the have-nots. And I don't understand this, is because financial success in this country is available for almost anyone if you're able to go to work and you have a handful of years ahead of you and are willing to make the sacrifice and put forth the effort. You'll find that tomorrow is a brighter day. But it comes with educating yourself. And you're right, there are a number of books, a number of which that I have read, and some were helpful or informative. Some seemed to be a book of platitudes, but they didn't teach that financial success is really just about the basics. You know, it's about understanding how to assess your financial health. In other words, and that comes with understanding creating a balance sheet, which is a really simple exercise. It's about understanding your cash flows, about what comes in every month and what goes out every month, and making sure that you have more coming in than goes out. And if you don't, well, how do you fix it? And these are really simple things. It's about setting up a budget. Again, something that no one had ever spoken to me about. And again, I learned to do that by getting myself in trouble when I was younger a couple of times. The same thing that corporations do on a day-to-day basis, we should be doing as individuals. It doesn't need to be complex. It's not. It doesn't require wonderful computer skills. You can do this with paper and pencil. You can do it with an Excel spreadsheet. If you go to Pathway to Prosperity, I actually have the Excel calculators that are there. They're really easy to figure out and to create and understand your balance sheet, your cash flows, and then ultimately to create a budget. And then once you've created that budget and you know what comes in every month and what goes out every month and what your savings rate is, how do you make it better? And once you've got savings that are coming every month, where do you direct those savings? So, do you pay down debt? Do you increase your investments? Do you add to your cash reserve? Some combination of those? Do you increase your lifestyle? So those are really the choices. So the book really is about empowering people by teaching folks, how money works, how to improve their financial situation. It really starts by, sort of self-realization, understanding where you're at, where you want to go, and putting a plan in place so that on a day-to-day basis that you're making better decisions. And again, this doesn't mean trying to pick the next Google or Microsoft or Netflix or Amazon. Again, it's just basic stuff. A good example of that was, when I was 18, I took a position in a grocery store. And I remember I was a bag boy and I'd been there for about 90 days. And my store manager called me into his office and said, you know, Mark, I want to talk to you about the 401k plan. And I remember saying, 401 what? And he said, the 401k. And I said, what is it? And he explained to me it was a tax-deferred retirement plan. And I sort of chuckled, and I thought, gosh, I'm 18 years old. Why do I need to think about retirement? And, you know, at the time, my manager was probably 45 and realistically had maybe a high school education and really didn't know anything about investments. But he gave me the best advice that he possibly could. And he said, look, Mark, he said, you're 18 today. At some point in time that you will be retirement age. And by saving today, you'll have a lot of money in the future. So he sort of, you know, walked me through getting this set up. And I said, well, okay, how much do I save? And he said, as much as you can afford. And I said, all right. And I said, what do I invest in? And he said, I can't tell you that, but you're young. And if I were you, I'd probably be invested in some diversified stock portfolio. So I did that. And again, I started out as a bag boy, and I did eventually work my way up through the grocery chain and ultimately became a store manager before I left. But when I left 16 years later, my 401k was over $250,000. And I can assure you that wouldn't have happened if they didn't have that 401k plan and if my manager hadn't pulled me aside and talked to me about something as basic is just contributing a little bit of my paycheck every single week into a tax-deferred investment account. So those are the sort of things that I think that you know, people need help with. That you know, where do they get that life coach that will help them make better decisions, to help them better understand these things? So that, again, it's not about doing hitting a home run. It's about doing a dozen things just a little bit better, and that's one example.
I'm talking with Mark Lazar on Book Spectrum. He's the author of the book, Pathway to Prosperity. Of course, the system, and again, you're right here, and this is very important for young people, but the system will fight this. Many people these days, even if they made many of these good decisions, find themselves in their 50s and sometimes 60s with not enough savings for retirement. This is a reality. With bad ones or good decisions, there are still ways to turn things around. Talk about that, Mark.
Yeah, that's a great observation. You know, clearly that when you're younger, time is your friend. You know, in the book, I talk about compound interest, something that Albert Einstein referred to as the eighth wonder of the world. And again, if you have a number of years, if you're in your 20s or 30s or even 40s, your net worth realistically will double, triple, or quadruple during your lifetime just because of the miracle of compound interest. As you get older, and you're absolutely right that it becomes more challenging, that it's much harder to hit those financial goals if you have a shorter runway. That doesn't mean that you still can't make tomorrow a better day, but you may have to work a little bit harder. You may have to sacrifice a bit more. You know, and that sacrifice may entail maybe that, you know, first it starts with understanding where you're at, what that time horizon looks like, and how do you have the best possible outcome? And it may mean, again, maybe it means taking on a second job. It's probably going to mean saving more and investing more. If you still have debt at that point, that's a different situation. And particularly if it's high interest debt, you certainly want to get that eliminated. The last thing I think a person wants as they're stepping into retirement is to have a debt service. So, you know, in a perfect world, you know, when somebody retires, they're debt-free, their home is paid for, they have a reasonable investment account in addition to, say, Social Security and hopefully perhaps maybe a pension. Those pensions that, you know, when I was younger were, you know, kind of a common thing. Most companies, bigger, at least larger companies, offered them. They no longer do that. Very few companies now offer a pension. So that really the risk of saving for retirement is up to us. Social Security, if you go to the Social Security website, will explain that Social Security is really only intended to replace about 40% of your income. And I think for most of us, it's probably even going to be less than that. So that really puts the onus of saving on you. And again, as to your previous question, is that it's easier when you're in your 20s and 30s than when you're in your 50s and 60s. But that's not to say that just because that you're 50 or 60 and you haven't achieved your financial goals, that you still can't improve your financial situation. And that's really what the book is about, Chris, is about, again, how do we improve ourselves? And even if it just means getting out of debt and having a cash reserve and increasing your investments and savings, and then quite frankly, just making better decisions going forward. And that those better decisions are small. You know, it's, you know, going to the grocery store and making maybe sensible purchases, maybe eating out just a little bit less, packing a lunch every day, maybe brewing your own coffee. You know, maybe it means when you're buying a car, you don't necessarily have to have that brand new shiny car with all of the bells and whistles and gadgets. Maybe you're buying a car that's just a few years old. You know, maybe it's consolidating your trip so you're not driving quite as much and saving fuel and so forth. So regardless of your age, whether you're in your 20s or 30s or 50s, 60s, you can still make better decisions today that improve your life tomorrow.
Exactly. And Mark, let's go back to the younger set. You're talking about making good decisions and you're talking about things that can happen once you get out of college is, you might be shocked to find out how expensive life can be, but if you're ready with a budget, things like that. But I want to get to something else that you bring up in the book, because you look at current events, money, and culture as well. And that's one of the things that sets this book apart from others. You not only look at ways to make money, ways to become successful, get to prosperity, but also you break it down for the real person to understand, but you also look at what's happening around them too. These days, many young people have been trained to demonize capitalism and celebrate socialism, a system of economics that has constantly failed and is responsible for mass generational poverty. This comes from Pied Piper politicians with promises of free universal health care, free college, student loan forgiveness, equal outcome, and the newly popular universal basic income. Sounds nice, right? But still, these concepts are designed to keep people equally poor, dependent on the government, perhaps a reason why financial literacy is not taught. What would it take to change this from the school systems on upward to help these young people realize that even if times are tough once they get out, they can still prosper or at least do much better under this system than they would under or what they think socialism is going to bring them?
Yeah, those are great points all, Chris. I think that there's a real misunderstanding of the difference between socialism and capitalism and communism. And so let's take just a few moments to make sure that we really understand what those terms mean. And, you know, I'm not sure how old you are. I just turned 60. When I grew up, it was pretty clear that the Soviet Union had collapsed. It was evident to all of us that system, that communistic system, was a failed system. And so that we understood that. I don't know if that's necessarily true today. To your point that I think that socialism is being taught as this sort of kind economic system. It comes with values and it sounds appealing and it may even sound almost, you know, Christian-like. In other words, because we do want to help the poor. We do want to help those that are less fortunate. Absolutely, we do. But I guess the real question is that what's the best method to do that? Is it really entrusting a government to make those decisions for us? So let's take a moment just to understand those economic systems. So on the one hand, you've got a free market capitalistic system, and the basis of capitalism is competition. So, you know, Adam Smith wrote a book probably 250 years ago called The Cause and Inquiry into the Wealth of Nations. And he was really the first economist prior to him. And he really wasn't, he wouldn't have defined himself as an economist. He was really a sociologist. But he had a keen interest in how the economy worked. And we were really just getting to the point where we understood that competition was a wonderful thing. And he coined a term called the invisible hand. And what that invisible hand term means is that in a free market system, that buyers and sellers come together in an unfettered market. And at the end of the day, the seller makes a fair and reasonable profit, and the buyer gets the best product at the best possible price. Conceptually, that's a wonderful thing. And so you think about that the basis of capitalism, it's just that when society operates based on self-interest, and they do so by following the rules of the road, in other words, the laws of the land, not breaking the laws, and operating in a moral and ethical manner, if at the end of the day, if they have more money, that's a wonderful thing, if they're more successful. So you think about, you know, the innovators, the entrepreneurs, and the disruptors of the world, and you know, the list is long, but you know, let's use some folks that everyone probably knows. You think about somebody like Bill Gates. You know, Bill Gates created this Windows-based operating system that prior to that, if you put me in front of a computer, it was like you know, putting a chimpanzee in front of a computer. I would have had about the same, the chimp would have probably had a greater chance of success of understanding how to operate it than I would have. But you know, what Bill Gates did with his Windows-based operating system is it allowed the average person that didn't have a degree in computer science to completely change the way that they communicate, the way they do their banking, the way they get their information, the way they file their tax return, the way they book travel. It revolutionized the world. It made us more efficient. He didn't do that out of some misplaced sense of virtue or altruism. He did it for self-interest. In other words, so that he could become prosperous, so that he could become wealthy. And the world is a better place for it. The capitalism, unlike communism, is not a zero-sum game. In other words, if it's done properly, everybody wins. When Jeff Bezos created Amazon, and you think about, you know, that this amazing intermediary that, you know, I could get up in the morning in my pajamas and pull up my phone, and with a few clicks on my phone, literally like magic, the next day, and sometimes the same day, a box shows up on my doorstep. I never had to leave the house. I got the best product at the best price and never had to leave my house. He didn't do that, again, out of for the greater good or to benefit the world. He did that so that he could become prosperous. A lot of people hate Jeff Bezos, but I will say that the world is a better place. In other words, that it saves us time, it saves us money, it's helped create additional competition. That competition is a wonderful thing. That doesn't happen in a communistic society. So free market capitalism, Chris, is about competition. And we want unfettered competition because at the end of the day, as people are competing for your dollars, and they're every day that these companies are working hard and trying to innovate and create new and better products and figure out how to create them at a lower price point. And so that's where wealth creation comes from, is that when a company figures out some way to produce a widget better, faster, cheaper, and you're able to buy that widget, say, for 25% less than you were previously, and the company makes an additional 5% profit because now they've automated or have some new revolutionary technology, that's wealth creation. Now you've got an extra 25 cents on the dollar that you can either spend somewhere else, you can save it, or some combination of the two, and the company is more profitable. That's a beautiful thing. So we want companies to compete for your business. So that's free market, a free market system or capitalism. And then you've got on the flip side of that, you've got communism. And communism is basically, it requires a totalitarian state. Probably the best example of communism would be the Soviet Union. So in other words, the government controls all factors of production, that you don't own anything in a true communistic society, that the government owns it. So the government will give you vouchers for your housing, for your transportation, for your food, and for your travel and so forth. And it's done so, I suspect that when Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto, I don't think that he was a bad person. I think that he looked, especially at that time, at this massive inequality in terms of wealth. And I think that his intentions were good. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions, Chris, as we all know. And so at that time, that people didn't have the opportunity to change their financial situation. You know, education was really for the wealthy. You didn't have a system where you know, entrepreneurs could start out with nothing and become successful in a matter of a handful of years. And so I suspect that he probably thought that was a fair system. But there's no wealth creation in a communistic society. There's no incentive, Chris, for you to get up tomorrow morning and to work harder or to take sacrifice or to put your capital at risk or go to school longer or to innovate, you know what I'm saying, or to create some new disruptive technology. There's no reward for that if your outcome is the same as the person next to you. In fact, those communistic societies do the very opposite of that. In other words, that if I get paid exactly the same as you do, I'm going to try and figure out how to work less hard, than you do so that I get paid more per hour. In fact, I would be rewarded for contributing less and having more leisure time. So a capitalistic system, creates wealth because it rewards people for doing the right behavior, the best behavior. And socialism is basically, I guess, Lenin famously said that socialism is the way station to communism. So socialism is sort of a hybrid of the two. You've got some aspects of free market capitalism. You've got some private property ownership. You can own stuff. You might own your business. You might own your home. But there's far greater government control. There's far greater regulation. There's regulation in terms of pricing, in terms of distribution, and there's a lot more restrictions. And along with the more socialistic systems, you also have more of a cronyistic capitalism. So, and crony capitalism is really antithetical to capitalism, Chris, that basically it's where big companies, and we're seeing this today, particularly in the tech sector, that have powerful lobbies. And they line the pockets of some of these politicians that will put forth legislation that actually would guarantee their profits. It will limit the competition. It will guarantee that they're not going to be broken up, and they're going to maintain basically a monopoly power. So you've got these unregulated monopolies. And quite frankly, that would include companies probably like Google and Microsoft and Apple and Amazon, and a number of others that you can't compete with them today. In theory, you can, but realistically, you can. And so capitalism, unlike socialism and communism, rewards the best behaviors. And ultimately, at the end of the day, Chris, leads to wealth creation and greater prosperity. The other economic models do the opposite. They're just a redistributive model that can only take money from those that have and give to those that have. And so it disincentivizes people from being innovative and disruptive and taking risk and sacrifice and so forth.
Mark Lazar, I want to thank you very much for being with us here on Book Spectrum. I wish we had more time, but you can find out more about this, more about A Pathway to Prosperity in Mark's new book, Pathway to Prosperity. Find a link to Mark Lazar's website and pick up his book on Barnes and Noble, Amazon, and other digital outlets. Links will be there on our website, bookspectrum.com. I'm Chris Cordani. Thank you for listening to Book Spectrum.